Hey guys, this is Sam, and you're listening to the Facing the Sun podcast, the show that helps shine a light on building a better you. Hi guys, welcome back to Facing the Sun. On today's episode, I'm joined by Terry Tucker, a guy who has quite the resume. Played college basketball, then went to work corporate marketing, then went to work as a police officer, is also a cancer survivor, and just really has some wonderful outlooks on life and things in general. It was a very, very inspiring session, and I hope you guys enjoy. Hi guys, welcome back to another episode of Facing the Sun. Today I am with Terry Tucker. Terry, how are you?
I'm great, Sam. Thanks for having me on. I'm looking forward to talking with you.
Always. We are mountain buddies. He is in Denver. I'm in Salt Lake. So we were just geeking out about how much we love the mountains. What brought you to Denver, Terry?
Actually, my wife's job. My wife has always been the primary breadwinner. So we've moved around a little bit, which is, I always say that's a reason to declutter in your life. So we got to get rid of stuff. We don't need that anymore. Let's get rid of that. We're moving. And as opposed to people who live the same place for 30 or 40 years, and you know, it's like they never declutter. So yeah. It was for my wife's job.
What does she do for work?
She's been in the financial services business for probably 40 years now. Cool. And so we've lived all over the place, Santa Barbara, California, Cincinnati, Houston, cool. Denver. Yeah.
I love that. We love powerful women in our lives. More powerful.
Hey, I absolutely married up. She married down. So it was absolutely a good thing. So, you know.
Well, I want to talk about you. I have so many questions about your life experience and kind of what you've been through, but I would love to hear it from your perspective as, you know, how you got here and what your story is.
Sure. So I was born on the south side of Chicago. I am the oldest of three boys. You can't tell this from my voice or from looking at me, but I'm 6'8" tall, and I played college basketball at the Citadel, which is in Charleston, South Carolina. So another coast. So East Coast, West Coast. And then after I graduated, I moved home to find a job. I'm really going to date myself now, but this was long before the internet was available to help people find a job. And I was the first person in my family to graduate from college. So I was very fortunate. I found my first job in the corporate headquarters of Wendy's International, the hamburger chain, in their marketing department. That was the good news. The bad news was that I lived with my parents for the next 3.5 years as I helped my mom care for my father and my grandmother, who were both dying of different forms of cancer. Professionally, as I said, started out at Wendy's. Then I moved to hospital administration. And then I made a major pivot in my life and became a police officer. And part of being a police officer, and I know you're going to laugh at this, you're 6'8". And yes, I was an undercover narcotics investigator. And I was also a SWAT team hostage negotiator.
Wow.
After that, started my own school security consulting business, coached girls high school basketball, published my first book in 2020. But for the last 10 years, I've been dealing with this rare form of cancer, rare form of melanoma. And then finally, my wife and I have been married for almost 30 years. We have one child, a daughter, who's a graduate of the United States Air Force Academy and is an officer in the new branch of the military, the Space Force.
She's in Space Force? That is so cool. Wow. Okay. Well, first of all, we are tall buddies. I'm 6 feet tall.
Okay.
So I love that. What was it like? Because I know, speaking from my own experience, cancer is a very private experience, and you always think that that won't happen to me. And so what was your kind of reaction when you were diagnosed? How did that feel?
Yeah, it was very simple for me. I had a callus that broke open on the bottom of my foot, right below my third toe. And at the time I was coaching basketball, so I didn't think much of it. But after a few weeks of it not healing, I went to see a podiatrist, a foot doctor friend of mine, and he took an x-ray and he said, Terry, I think you have a little cyst in there and I can cut it out. And he did. And he showed it to me. It was just a little gelatin sack with some white fat in it, no dark spots, no blood, nothing that gave either one of us concern. But fortunately or unfortunately, he sent it off to pathology to have it looked at. And then 2 weeks later, I received a call from him. And as I said, he was a friend of mine. And the more difficulty he was having explaining what was going on, the more frightened I was becoming. And so finally, he just laid it out for me. He said, Terry, I've been a doctor for 25 years. I have never seen this form of cancer. You have a very rare form of melanoma that appears on the bottom of the feet or the palms of the hands. And because my cancer was so rare, he recommended I go to MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston and be treated. And so I did. But, you know, initially, I think I went through all the stages that we would associate with grief. You know, first it was denial. This possibly can't be happening to me. And then you get mad. And then you sort of bargain with God. Our daughter was in high school at the time. It was like, you know, please, God, let me live long enough to see her graduate from high school. Yeah. And then you get down a little bit. And then at least for me, I was like, you know, this sucks, but I'm going to have to embrace the suck. You know, these are the cards that I've been dealt. I don't like this hand at all, but I'm going to have to play it to the best of my ability. And I've been playing it for the last 10 plus years now.
And how are you feeling today?
Kind of worn out. I still have tumors in my lungs. I have had my leg amputated in 2020. I had my foot amputated in 2018. So I go every 3 weeks for treatment and it pretty much beats me up. So I do things like this to kind of keep me going, to give me a purpose in life. And I feel that when my father was dying, he was in real estate and he had end-stage breast cancer back in the 1980s, which for a man, they had no idea how to treat that. And so they pretty much told him to go home and die. And he lived another 3.5 years. And I believe he did because he had a purpose. He worked up till 2 weeks before he died. And like I said, he was in real estate. He loved real estate. And so I kind of filed that in the back of my head. You know, it's like, well, when it's my turn in the barrel, then I'm going to have to remember that. And doing things like this podcast, sharing my experience, hopefully making a difference in people's lives, gives me that purpose right now.
Oh, I absolutely agree. Do you feel that your background in sports helped you really hold on to like the power of mindset? I feel that way for me. I was a competitive swimmer for 14 years, and I totally understood that the way you think about your performance will impact your performance. And so if you have a positive mindset, that's going to translate into when you compete. And obviously cancer is an entirely different experience, but the power of the mind is a real thing. And being able to say, no, I'm going to be stronger than this and I'm going to be more positive through this experience can translate. So do you feel like your basketball experience really played into that?
I do. And I'll give you an interesting story. So when I was 16 years old, And for you, this will be back when the dinosaurs roamed the earth. This was 1976, the country's bicentennial. And there was a gold medal winning Olympic swimmer by the name of Shirley Babashoff, who had one of the greatest quotes that I ever heard. And this is what she said. She said, winners think about what they want to happen. Losers think about what they don't want to happen. Mm-hmm. And I think that goes to your point about the importance of mindset. When I was growing up in Chicago, Indiana University had a basketball coach by the name of Bobby Knight. And Knight had a saying that went, mental is to physical as 4 is to 1. So here's this great coach teaching elite athletes to use their bodies to be great basketball players on the court. But what he was really saying with that quote is that your mind or your mindset is 4 times more important than anything your physical body is going to do. So, yes, I think that the whole aspect of competing, of thinking about what you want to happen, because we all become what we think. Mm-hmm. And I think that's an incredibly important thing. But what I believe athletics taught me, or at least team sports taught me, and I started playing basketball when I was 9 years old and played all the way up till I was 21, is the importance of being part of something that's bigger than yourself. You realize on a team that if you don't do your job, not only do you let yourself down, but you let your teammates down, your coaches down, your fans down. And if you think about it, the biggest team game that we all play is this game of life.
Wow. I love that. I was just trying to think of how to frame that into a question and you did it exactly for me. But I feel like every kid should play, do something in community. It doesn't need to be a sport. It can be like anything else, but something that really fosters that idea of there is something bigger than me. Yeah. But I play a very important role in this system. And so how did that translate I want to hear about your being a cop. What inspired that decision? Take me back there.
Yeah, so there really is a backstory, you know. So you kind of look at my resume, it's like, you know, first two jobs in business, and then you became a cop. It's like, that doesn't make any sense. Well, there is a backstory. So my grandfather was a Chicago police officer from 1924 to 1954, and he was actually shot in the line of duty with his own gun. It was not a serious injury. He was shot in the ankle. But my dad, who was an infant at the time, always remembered the stories that his mom, my grandmother, told about that knock on the door of Mrs. Tucker, come, you know, grab your son, come with us, your husband's been shot. And let's face it, you know, trauma medicine in 1933 was a whole lot different than trauma medicine in 2022. But when I expressed an interest in going into law enforcement, my dad was absolutely not. You're going to go to college. You're going to major in business. You're going to get out, get a great job, get married, have 2.4 kids and live happily ever after. But that's what my dad wanted me to do. That wasn't what I felt my passion was. So when I graduated from college, I had a big life choice to make. I could say, hey, Dad, sorry, I'm going to go blaze my own trail and be a cop. Or out of love and respect for you, I will do what you want me to do and go into business. So now my resume makes a little bit more sense, because that's exactly what I did. I went into business because that's what my dad wanted me to do. And then I sort of joke, I did what every good son did. I waited till my father passed away, and then I followed my dreams and got into law enforcement. And I was pretty old. I was a 37-year-old rookie police officer. So I was pretty old to be getting into that line of work. But it was always something that I felt was what I was supposed to do. It was my passion. It was my purpose. It was my why, whatever you want to call it. And eventually I got to it, but it sort of took a little while to get there.
You know what? Everyone's on their own timeline. And I think that's the beauty of it. But what was the difference in working? You know, I mean, I had a big corporate marketing job too, and it just didn't fulfill me. And so what was the difference in kind of the way you viewed your life and every your day to day from working just a job that you knew you should have versus the job you loved? What was the difference there?
Yeah, I mean, I don't, I'm not upset in any way that I had those jobs in healthcare and in marketing, because it gave me some life experience, and it gave me an opportunity to be around some really talented, really smart individuals. And so when I got into law enforcement, I had that. I had some life experience. I had some things to draw on, you know, out on the street with people and things like that. So it was, I knew it was just something I was doing to mark time. You know, I didn't have a passion. I wasn't like, oh God, I can't wait to get up tomorrow morning and go to work. It was a job. And I think a lot of times we talk about the importance of living our passion or our purpose or our why. And we think that has to be our job, that our career, what we do for a living. And it doesn't. You know, you can have a job over here and that's what you do to pay the bills, but your purpose or your passion is to write or to be a podcast host or to coach or whatever it is. And I always tell young people, especially, if there's something in your heart, something in your soul that you believe you're supposed to do, but it scares you, go ahead and do it. Because at the end of your life, the things you're going to regret are not going to be the things you did. They're going to be the things you didn't do. And by then it's going to be too late to go back and do them.
That's the best piece of advice ever. I think fear is what holds a lot of people back, especially young people who feel like they have all these big decisions in their life to make, and they go with what someone else tells them to do or what feels comfortable because they don't really have a basis to make that choice regardless. But man, I wish I could go back and tell 18-year-old Sam to do what scares her. I feel like the life path would be a lot different. But at the end of the day, the universe's timing is perfect and God's timing is perfect. So everything worked out the way it was supposed to.
It does.
Tell me about your book. I want to know all about it. You see it in the background there.
Yeah. So the book was something that, you know, a lot of people have been suggesting you should write a book. You should write a book. And I was really putting it off. I'm like, look, I'm not a writer. I'm not an author. And, you know, there's sort of the old joke that goes, when we talk to God, it's called prayer. When God talks to us, it's called schizophrenia. So God never spoke to me. But I think what God does is put people in your path that continue to make the same suggestion. And enough people were saying, write a book, write a book, write a book. And I think that's kind of God's way of saying, look, this is what I want you to do, but it's up to you. You got free will, free choice. You do whatever you want to do, but I want you to do this. And so when enough people started suggesting I write a book, I thought, well, maybe I should look at that. And the book was really born out of two conversations I had. One was with a former player that I had coached in high school who moved to Denver with her fiance. And my wife and I had had dinner with them one night. And I remember after dinner saying to her, you know, I'm really excited that you're living close and I can watch you find and live your purpose. And she got real quiet for a while. And then she looked at me and she said, well, coach, what do you think my purpose is? I said, I have no idea what your purpose is, but that's what your life should be about. Finding the reason you were put on the face of this earth, using your unique gifts and talents and living that reason. So that was one conversation. And then I had a young man reach out to me who was in college on social media. And he asked me what I thought were the most important things he should learn, not to just be successful in business or his job, but to be successful in life. And I didn't want to give him the get up early, work hard, help others. Not that those aren't important. Those are incredibly important. But I wanted to see if I could go deeper with him. So I took some time and I made some notes and eventually had these kind of 10 ideas, these 10 thoughts, these 10 principles. And so I sent him the principles. And then I stepped back and I was like, well, you know, I've got a life story that fits underneath this principle, or I know somebody whose life emulates that principle. So literally during the 3 months that I was healing after my leg amputation, I sat down at the computer every day and I built stories. And they're real stories about real people underneath each of the principles. And that's how sustainable excellence, the 10 principles to leading your uncommon and extraordinary life, came to be.
I love it. I can't wait. I'm going to order a copy so I can
thank you.
Read it. Oh, of course. Anytime. What is your favorite principle in the book, just to give people a little taste?
You know, that's a great question. And it's always fun for me as an author, because each principle is a chapter. Mm-hmm. And when people reach out to me, there's always one chapter that resonates with them. You know, that this is the one number, and they're not in any order. Number one isn't any more important than number seven or anything like that. But the one that really resonates with me, and I think it does because, and I'm not proud to say that this is true, but I've done this many times. And the principle is this: most people think with their fears and their insecurities instead of using their minds. And I know I've done that throughout my life. I know, oh, I should do this. Oh, wait a minute. Maybe I'm not smart enough. Maybe I don't know enough. Maybe people are going to laugh at me if I fail. All those negative things that go on in our brains that you're like, and you stop yourself. That's thinking with your fears and insecurities. That's not thinking, as you said before, you know, boy, if you could go back and tell, you know, Sam years ago, hey, yeah, you're scared, but you should still do this, your life would be different. I think all of us would do the same thing. I mean, I don't think I'm unique in being saying that, hey, yeah, I've not done things or I've not pursued things that I felt I should because I was afraid or I was insecure.
Yeah. What advice would you give someone if they're finding themselves kind of stuck in that place of fear?
Fear is not, everybody thinks, you know, fear is a bad thing. It's not. There's an individual out at Stanford University by the name of Gavin De Becker, who wrote a really good book, and he's got a whole institute out there. And the book is called The Gift of Fear. And I think back on my days as a police officer, and people always ask, you know, wherever you're afraid, as a cop. And I used to tell them, any cop that tells you that they're not afraid is either one, lying to you, or two, they're stupid. Because fear really, it's there for a reason. It keeps you alive. And there have been times when my partner and I were going on a simple run, like, you know, somebody called in to knock on their neighbor's door and tell them to turn the television down or something like that. It's just a simple noise run. But if we always had an agreement that if one of us, if the hair on the back of our neck went up and we were like, we got a bad feeling about this, even if it was a simple run, it was like, okay, we're going to be extra cautious. We're going to do everything by the book here, and we're going to respect that fear. So I think you need to respect fear. It's there for a reason, but fear can't paralyze you. And it can't. I mean, people can be so afraid that they can't do anything, especially in times of trauma and things like that. And so I think it's important to kind of just take a step back. And that's, you know, well, that seems real simple, but people don't, you know, people are sort of on the firing line. And if one person would take a step back and kind of look around for a minute and say, well, okay, maybe we should move in this direction, or maybe we should do that. Just take a step back and assess the whole situation. Because a lot of times when you're afraid, you get tunnel vision, you know, your hearing goes away, your fine motor skills go away, all the kind of things that happen to us as police officers. That's why you train over and over and over to draw and shoot, so that when that happens, it's all muscle memory. You don't have to think about it. It just happens. So just take a moment and step back, take a deep breath, look around and see what you see. And I think that really, I know it sounds simple, but sometimes these things aren't really complicated and we just make them more complicated than they are.
Oh, I think everyone's probably the master at making things more complicated in their own life than they need to be. There's a quote that I read a few weeks ago that I really loved. It was, you can't see your reflection in boiling water. And so you need to let the water calm before you really make a decision. And I think that applies to anger. I think that applies to fear. I think that applies to a lot of different things where if we can just take a step back and realize what's happening and then assess and then decide. But so many people, especially my generation, are so reactive. We want to make decisions now. We want things instantaneously. And I think that the art of patience is being lost a lot. So I think people just need to learn how to, you know, slow down and take a breath for a second.
Well, yeah, I read something the other day that a typical career is 80,000 hours. A typical life is 672,000 hours. But you think about how much time you spend on those 80,000 hours, how much you obsess about it after work and how much stress it causes you and all that kind of stuff. And if you think about it, it's such a small amount of your overall life. And yet we give it so much power and so much time that we really don't need to give it. And, you know, we should be concentrating on things that we're grateful for that make us happy and things like that. And we just spend so much time on something that's such a small part of our lives.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people get busy making a living. They forget to make a life.
Yeah.
And I think that's the ultimate goal, right? Is if the two blend, amazing. If you can make your work your passion and you don't never work a day in your life, I think that's great. But I think a lot of people, it's an interesting concept that they tie that their passion needs to be their job. And it doesn't. I think that their passion is a lot of different avenues for a lot of different people.
And I think passion changes over time. You know, when I was young, my purpose I felt was basketball. And then it was law enforcement. And now as I'm probably coming to the end of my life, it's probably more of put as much goodness, as much positivity, as much motivation, as much love back into the world as you can with whatever time you have left. So I don't think, you know, what your purpose is when you're 19 is necessarily going to be what your purpose is when you're 59 and that kind of thing. So don't get too excited if your purpose or your passion changes over your life.
Maybe it's supposed to.
Maybe it is.
You just need to let go of the idea that this passion is, you have this one overarching theme, like passion in your life. Maybe the idea is to be willing to let it ebb and flow because that's how we connect with the most people.
You're absolutely right.
I love that. Terry, I have one question that I ask all of my guests on this podcast, and I'm very interested to hear your answer with all of your life experience. If you could give yourself a piece of advice to the version of yourself 5 years ago, what would it be and why?
I think we've kind of talked about it, but when you gave that to me earlier, before we went on, I was thinking about it. It would be not to be so scared, to take more chances, to take more risks, to fail more often. And I think people don't want to do that. Failure in our life is considered sort of something negative. But I'll tell you right now, from my experience, the road to success is paved with failure. And if you don't fail, you're never going to be successful. So use failure. Nelson Mandela, the former president of South Africa, used to say, I never lose. I either win or I learn. So if you take that and say, okay, you know, yeah, I'm scared, but I might fail. That's okay. Did you learn something? If you learned, then it wasn't a failure.
Yeah. I think that is one of the most powerful lessons I have learned, in my adult life is failure is not a bad thing. I love that quote. The road to success is paved with failure. I think it's going to be one for the journal today for sure.
There you go.
Harry, it was such a pleasure. And I wish you all the best and all the healthy, happy days in your future. And I can't wait to see what happens. I'm sure we'll stay in touch and I want to read your book and send you my thoughts about it.
Please do. I really appreciate that. I love when people connect with me and say, I like this or I didn't like that or you're an idiot or whatever. So I got no problem with whatever you want to say. But thank you very much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. We'll link everything to Terry's book, his socials, all that if you guys want to get in touch with him. But wow, what a pleasure, my friend. I'm sure we'll chat soon.
Thank you.
Hello, my friends. Just a friendly reminder, I do offer life coaching. So if something in today's episode resonated with you, you can book a free call with me. I would love to chat with you. You can find me on my socials or send me an email at sam@sunfloweragencies.com. Thank you guys so much for listening. I appreciate you. If you want to keep up with all the happenings, be sure to like, follow, subscribe. You know the drill. You can also find me on Instagram at samadams7 and find out more about the biz at sunfloweragencies.com. That's SNFLWR agencies.com. Thanks, guys.